of many to come, press availabilities of the Senate Democratic Caucus. I'm Senator Johnny Ellis, leader of the Democratic Senators, and for this first session of the 28th Alaska Legislature. To my right, I'm joined by Senator Bill Wilikowski, representing East Anchorage, and to my left is Senator Berta Gardner, newly elected senator from Midtown Anchorage. And it's my honor and privilege to be here with them today. I want to thank you for attending. We'll be here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. in the Fehrenkamp Room, one of the legislative rooms named for a great Democratic senator from Fairbanks, Senator Betty Fehrenkamp, the only woman after which one of the Senate office committee rooms is named. And we're proud to be here today. The focus for the Democratic Caucus this legislative session, it's pretty simple. It's a back-to-basics agenda of education, energy, and the economy. Energy is important in two respects, bringing affordable energy to Alaskans all across the state and getting a fair return for our natural resources, in particular our oil resource that funds the state. I just want to mention we are on teleconference. There will be participation by press from time to time from around the state, in addition to the Juneau Press Corps. Some other folks will be listening in on the internet through Gavel to Gavel, and we'd ask the press people when you ask your questions, and we will, in this caucus, in these press availabilities, always save time for questions after presentations from our members, to please identify yourself by name and your affiliation, your press affiliation, just so the folks that know at home, we're familiar with you guys, but we want the people participating in their government to know who's asking the questions as well. It'll be a good relationship in both directions. So those are pretty simple ground rules. We'll proceed in that fashion, and I'll turn first to Senator Gardner for some comments. I'm going to get used to this, I swear. Senator Gardner, I'm so proud of those words. On education, public education, we're Democrats. Education is a top priority for us, always has been, always will be, public education. We'll take questions on that subject if there are some, and then we'll turn to Senator Wilikowski for his comments about the oil tax issue. So with that, Senator Gardner.
Thank you very much, and I'm very, very glad to be here. I think that the news on the education front this week is that the chickens are coming home to roost. 4 years of flat funding, failure to forward fund education, and we're hearing about layoffs in the Anchorage School District, 215. And in the Juneau School District, they announced they will be soon having layoffs. And also the University of Alaska up in Fairbanks anticipates laying off significant numbers of layoffs. It's not about the jobs, it's about the services that are provided to children. And the people being laid off in my school district in Anchorage are special ed support staff. They are the graduation counselors and support staff, those kinds of positions that really do not help us reach a goal of 90% graduation rate by, what is it, 2025? We know what we need to do to provide the resources that our schools need to do the job that we expect them to do. And the resources need to be inflation-proofed. Education is the only department that's not being inflation-proofed. 4 years in a row, flat funding. It's an erosion of services. It's an erosion of the abilities of our schools to do what is absolutely needed to provide the services that we expect so our kids can graduate. I think it's untenable that education being the constitutionally required investment in our biggest resource, our children, is not happening to the level that it needs to be. That's a major disappointment, and we will continue to fight for early funding and for inflation-proofing education funding. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions about education funding, public education?
Yes. Shauna Crandall, Alaska Education Update. We just heard a presentation in the Senate Education Committee. The Gates Foundation gave a bunch of money for STEM education, science, technology, engineering, and math, and saw very little results for that, so they did a study and found that a lot of the funding was going towards stuff at the top and very little was getting down to the students. And we keep hearing from Governor Parnell about how he wants to see results. Do you think maybe something similar is going on in schools, that the money just isn't getting down to the students and things need to be reorganized? I know Mayor Sullivan looked at that last year too. Is there
I think there's a
well-grounded concern about the amount of instructional time that is focused on testing and assessments, and the fact that some of those things are not effective in telling us what we need to do, and not effective in telling students what they should do. I think we should reduce some of the testing, include starting with the high school graduation qualifying exam, which was watered down such that it doesn't really tell employers what they want to know. It doesn't tell students what they need to be doing. It's a disincentive for kids at the highly successful end and at the struggling end to stay in school. Those who think they will never be able to pass it, no reason to graduate, no reason to be there. So, yeah, I think that we do spend too much time on assessments, and that's what the GATE study showed, that there's a great deal of time, and it's to the detriment of the real learning that should be going on in classes, and it's a loss of instructional time.
And Senator Gardner, you, coming from the House Democrats have been very strong on parents as teachers, early childhood education.
Absolutely.
Senator French, who's not able to join us today, has been a big leader, along with former Senator Betty Davis,
that's
on
right.
voluntary pre-K, early childhood education, and the studies and statistics and data about early brain development and early childhood education. Do you want to comment on some of that?
Yeah, there is no question. I mean, I think it's abundantly clear from studies all over the place that children who attend preschool do better, have better graduation rates, and more academic success. That being said, I don't know that we want to mandate it. In fact, we don't. This should be optional for families who want to participate in it. And whether it's parents as teachers or expanding Head Start, I mean, even in our state where the Moore lawsuit found that the state was not properly providing educational opportunity to all children, part of the settlement that this administration signed off on was to have a two-year kindergarten program. Well, if a two-year kindergarten program starts a year early with four-year-olds, that's basically a preschool program. And the governor does not want to be said to be supporting preschool, so he calls it a two-year kindergarten. But it really is a preschool program that is recognized to help struggling students and at-risk students, and in fact, all students. But in the most struggling school districts in the state, we are now doing pre-K, which I think should be expanded for kids who would benefit from it wherever they are.
So voluntary pre-K could lead to achieving our goal of better graduation results.
It's one of the steps.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Anything further on public education funding? If not, I'm going to turn quickly to Senator Bill Willikowski to discuss the oil issue.
All right, thank you. And obviously, this is an issue that is important to all of us. It generates 90% of our state revenue. So I think it's fair to say all of us will be working on this issue. Senator Gardner's on the TAPS committee, Senator French on resources. And we look forward to working with the majority, working with the governor to try to come up with a better bill. I think what you have really is just a difference in philosophy on how we get more oil in the pipeline. And let me be clear, we all want more oil in the pipeline. There's been a decline. There's been a decline in oil production since 1981, an average of about 5.2% over 30 years. We all want more oil in the pipeline. The question is, what's the philosophy that will get us more oil in the pipeline? The governor's philosophy is to go back to a similar tax structure that we had under the ELF, very low taxes. We had the ELF in place for about 30 years. It was a tax structure where you had 0% taxation on new fields, 0% taxation on new production. And that's production taxes. We can look, so we have this perfect 30-year experiment, and we can see, how did that work? How did that philosophy of low taxes actually work in the state of Alaska? And what we find is, you had a 5.2% average decline in production, you had a loss in jobs, you had a loss in investment. Those facts are clear. In fact, from 2000 to 2006, you had Kuparuk declining from about an 11 or 12% gross production tax rate down to a 1% gross production tax rate. This was at a time when oil was rising to historic levels. It tripled in price. So you can look at those 6 years, and what happened there? You had an 8% decline in production at a legacy field in Kuparuk. We uncovered a BP memo from just last year during our Resources Committee hearings, where BP says the role of Alaska in its global portfolio is to generate large amounts of cash that it can invest elsewhere in the world. So the companies were clearly in harvest mode. We knew we had to change the dynamics here in Alaska. We did that when we passed ACES. We did that two things. Number one, we said we want to encourage investment in Alaska because companies were taking their money that they were making in Alaska and investing it in places like Libya, investing it in places like Algeria, investing it in places that had tax rates of 80, 90%, investing it in places like Iraq, where Iraq, they're earning a profit of $2 a barrel compared to the profit per barrel of about $29 that they're earning here in Alaska, according to legislative research. So we knew we had to change the dynamic, and the way we did that was through capital credits. We did that through tax incentives. We did that through a very much discussed system that was recommended by numerous experts from all across the world, experts that represent oil companies, and they said, this is the plan that will get you more reinvestment. And so we can look, and how has it worked since we've passed ACES? Well, you've had all-time highs in investment every single year since we passed ACES. We've had all-time highs in jobs every single year since we passed ACES. We've had a number of companies doing business in Alaska has increased from about 19 to over 65, about a 283% increase in the number of companies doing business in Alaska. We've had companies making billions and billions of dollars in profits. In fact, according to the numbers that we've put together, about $35 billion, over $35 billion in profits since we passed ACES. According to the Parnell's own experts just a few years ago, the rates of return at Prudhoe Bay were over 100% for the oil industry for new investment that they were making. So when the oil companies take out a lease in the state of Alaska, they have a legal obligation to produce on that lease when they can make a reasonable profit. I would say a $35 billion in profits and rates of return of over 100% are very reasonable. I think there's not a court in the world that would disagree with that. So it's a difference of philosophy. The governor wants to go back to a philosophy that failed us for 30 years, that probably cost the state of Alaska tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars in lost revenue. And you can say, well, how do you figure it's hundreds of billions of dollars in lost revenue? Look at Norway. Alaska has a permanent fund that is $40 billion roughly, maybe 42 or so. Norway has a permanent fund, less oil, less time, of over $600 billion. It's a difference of philosophy in how you manage, how you deal with this issue. So we don't think we should go back to the failed philosophy that has failed us for 30 years. We have some new ideas, in particular, just some particular shortcomings with the governor's bill. He's eliminating progressivity, completely eliminating progressivity. When we passed ACES, we went from a gross tax structure, which protected the state on the downside, and instead we said we're going to take the money on the high side. Now what he's doing is he's given away the low side, and now he wants to give away the high side. Terrible public policy. There's not an expert that has testified before us that says we need to do this. What it effectively does, and then he, on top of that, wants to give a 20% gross revenue exclusion on new oil in legacy fields. That would effectively drop the tax rate, just the production tax rate, from about 40% down to about 17%. There's not an expert that has said you need to drop the taxes that low on legacy fields. We agreed last year, in fact, we voted on it last year, let's do a revenue exclusion for new oil in new fields. Don't do it in the legacy fields. They don't need it. It's giving our money away. Some other problems with the bill, eliminating the 20% capital credit. This, and we can certainly talk about whether or not the levels of the capital credit are too high or too low. They probably are. We've been told we have one of the most generous capital credit systems in the world. That was something we intentionally did, and you can see the results that have come from that. All-time highs in investment. We probably do need to cap it, and one of the suggestions we had last year, one of the amendments we pushed last year, was to cap it at, I think, 65%. But eliminating the capital credit completely, what that was designed to do was to reward, incentivize companies to reinvest in Alaska. If you take away the capital credit, you are disincentivizing. You are giving companies every incentive in the world to pocket their money and go invest it in Libya and go invest it in Nigeria or somewhere else in the world. That's bad policy. And the fourth problem that sort of jumps out is deferring payment on net operating loss credits. What this does is this helps, this is for the small producers. This allows producers who are in the development stage to get credits immediately. This doesn't affect the big three because they're able to take credits because they have an income stream. If you're a new producer in the state of Alaska, you have no income stream. What we did was we intentionally put this in here because we wanted to spur new companies to come to Alaska, new investors, new wildcatters. We knew we had to break, we knew we needed more competition on the North Slope. We've had three main companies doing business there. We knew we needed to break through that. We put this provision in there to break through that. The governor gets rid of that. And on top of that, he has a provision in there that you can delay your production, and as long as you delay it, the state's going to pay you a 15% interest rate on the money that is being delayed. That means if you have a, if you had a new company that came in and spend $1 billion on a large investment, in 5 years, the state of Alaska is paying you double your money of the investment just by sitting on the development. So I think that's a bad policy, but we look forward to working with the governor, working with the majority to come up with some legislation that that we think works for Alaska and that will get more oil in the pipeline.
Thank you, Senator. Sounds like you're warming up for this debate. So. Questions, comments? Yes, Becky.
Becky Moore, the Associated Press.
Thank you.
Senator, yesterday the Natural Resources Commissioner was in front of the TAPS committee and talked about the missing piece in his mind being oil taxes, that the state has been working on permitting efficiencies, on promoting the state, a number of different steps, and that's the missing key. Does the minority believe, or do you personally believe that that oil tax reform is a missing piece, or are we supposed to be, should we be looking at enforcement of leases and other things rather than, and I guess, tabling oil taxes?
Well, I'll just speak for myself on this, but we think there are things, tweaks that can be done to the oil tax, or I think there are things that can be done, tweaks on the oil taxes, and you're going to see a bill that I'm going to file in the next few days. There may be co-sponsors on it. You know, the governor talks about protecting Alaska on the downside, and the way he does it is by eliminating credits. Well, there's a better way you can protect Alaskans on the downside, and we talked about it when we passed ACES. You establish a minimum gross tax on floor. That's how you protect Alaskans on the downside. Capping progressivity. I think most of our experts that we've heard from over the years say, when we do get on the high end, and I'm talking $150 to $200, our tax structure is too high. And I've been persuaded, I've said that, Senator French has said that, we propose legislation to change that. So I think there are tweaks that can be made, but to get rid of progressivity, to give away completely our high end, to give away FY14 projected $110 a barrel, you're giving away $1.6 billion. I think it's more than that, but it's $1.6 billion you're giving away, and you're not getting a thing in return for that. That's terrible public policy. There's not a business in the world that would agree to that. If an oil company executive suggested that, or proposed that, or passed that, every board of director would be fired. It's terrible public policy. Get something for it, at least. To say, well, we're going to give you billions in tax breaks and hope and pray that you do something for it, that's crazy. That's terrible public policy. So, I mean, there are other ideas. Enforce the leases. You know, we sat on Point Thompson for 30 years, 27 plans of development. And
well, we didn't sit on it. don't say we.
Right. The, you know, it was, the leases were never enforced. And then finally, the leases were taken away. And Exxon sued to get them back. And so, you know, sometimes the state needs to take an aggressive stance and say, look, there are other companies in the world that would love to have these leases, that would love to produce this oil. And if you're not going to develop it, we're going to get people that will develop it, Alaskan companies, Alaskan workers, to do it.
You mentioned on the gross tax exclusion for legacy fields. My understanding is that's for newer legacy fields. So why is that objectionable? Because I know that members of the majority last year talked about the importance of infield production.
Infield production is obviously something that's important. I think what we've heard from the experts over the years is that's where they make the greatest profit per barrel. I mean, you have defined units, you have delineated units. I remember hearing testimony 6 years ago that every 10 times they stick a well in the ground, they were finding oil 9 times in the legacy fields. So you have the infrastructure there. You just don't have the risk there that you have in new fields where you don't have them delineated. You don't know how the structure is. You don't know what sort of flow rate you're going to get. But in the legacy fields, those are extremely profitable. The net present values that were done by Gaffney and Klein, the governor's consultant, several years ago, the internal rates of return that were done several years ago, those are on legacy fields. The numbers that we ran when the Jim Mulva, the CEO of ConocoPhillips, came to Alaska and said, hey, if you give us this $5 billion in tax break, or this multi-billion dollar tax break, we're going to invest $5 billion and develop this iPad facility, drill 90 new wells. We ran numbers on that. It had a 92% rate of return, a net present value of billions of dollars in profit. So you don't need it. I'm not persuaded you need it in the legacy fields. You probably do. You probably could use it in the new fields. And so I'd be supportive of an exclusion in the new fields. I supported it last year. I just don't think you need it in the legacy fields.
Bob.
Thank you, Senator. Bob Takacs for Legislative Digest and Laws for the Sea. Senators, I assume you've made these same kind of arguments and discussions to the members of the majority. Are they listening to you? And also, do you see that they are contracting for the kind of experts that the Senate will need to analyze the governor's proposals fully?
Well, we've just gotten here and gotten organized and started our discussions both formally and informally. Senator Gardner is on the throughput special committee on throughput, so she can speak to that. But things are we're just warming up, just getting started, Bob. And so maybe Senator Gardner can speak to the work of that first committee that will have public hearings. Senator Wilikowski may want to comment about the consultants.
Yeah, we just started with the first presentations from DOR and DNR. And one of the things that concerns me is that their projected revenue for the, I think it goes to 2020. Basically, I've asked for a comparison of what it would look like if Senate Bill 21 were in place. What would the projections be until 2020? What would our budgets look like? Senator Wilikowski has suggested we also ask what would it look like if House Bill 110, as the governor originally proposed, had passed. So I think that those are questions that they also talk about the tax rate, but they acknowledge on the record that they haven't included lease costs. Well, that's really significant when we are a state that owns our own oil and other places don't. So the tax take in Texas, for example, is only part of the figure that we need. We also need to know what it costs the producers to get access to that oil, which, you know, is not included in their figure. So it's a distortion of the real facts, or it's partial information.
Senator, do you have anything to say about consultants staffing up?
I think we should get Gaffney and Klein. I think they're a firm that has worked on this. They've worked on it for 6 years. The governor hired them, has had them under contract. My understanding is that contract is terminated. I think Gaffney and Klein, Rich Ruggiero in particular, should be hired, brought back. He's very reputable. They do predominantly businesses for oil companies, but they develop tax structures all over the world. They've got a lot of credibility in this building. I think I'd like to see them personally.
They're world-renowned, and when you talk to these folks on the record and off the record, they are willing to testify and talk about, I guess, what could be characterized as the secrets of the oil industry, the internal considerations and deliberations that lead to economic decisions. And they tell you the good, the bad, and the ugly of public policy and of governments, the mistakes and the successes that politicians and governments have had in regulating this industry, taxing this industry, and getting the most for their people from oil development. They are willing to say things in a more straightforward manner about the oil industry from an insider perspective and about government policy from an insider consultant perspective. It's refreshing, the information they share with us. It is solid gold in terms of good advice. We don't always agree with them. They were the people that talked the Democrats into switching from a gross profits tax to a net profits tax in this modern era. They're the ones that convinced us that we were old-fashioned in our simplicity of just counting the barrels, and Democrats, sort of the Harry Crawford approach of just count the darn barrels, and we know at least, you know, nothing fancy. We're just going to count the barrels and figure out what our share should be. But Gaffney Klein, you know, the governor has had confidence in them in the past, and I would hope that we would be privy to their good advice.
And let's remember that we have not finished auditing any of the ACES tax returns. Not a single one has been completed. So we don't really know. We also don't know of the billions of dollars the state has invested on North Slope, buying down the risk, putting our own skin in the game. We know very little about what we bought with that.
Senator, when those audits are done, do you expect you or any of the public is going to get to know the result?
Probably not very much.
I want to make a comment, too, about some of the there's been sort of a sense with the new, some of the new legislators have made comments about we're in the oil business, and yes, we are, and that there are people who aren't concerned about the decline or don't believe the decline of Prudhoe and Kuparuk is happening, and that we have to, these are people that have been attending some of the, you know, the different organizations, interest groups that are advocating for the governor's position or for a major rollback in oil taxes. And all of that's fine in their preparation for the session, but sort of the insinuation that there is on the part of the Democrats or Alaskans who are concerned about the oil wealth giveaway, that there is a lack of concern about the decline or a idea that it's not happening, that's just simply not true. That's a sort of a simplistic view or a view that is just not accurate. We are concerned about getting oil in our pipeline in a way that's a fair split between the industry and the people of Alaska for our God-given resource that is for this generation and for future generations through the permanent fund and through future development. The benefit should accrue to multiple generations. So I just want to say, with all due respect to my new colleagues, there is no lack of concern on our part. There is no denial of the decline in production. We just want to have a more sophisticated view of the facts of what has gone on here and what could go on in the future and the impact on our budgets and on the services that the people of Alaska depend on, specifically education and other basic services of government. Any other questions, comments? Back to Becky.
Senator, you mentioned that you would be looking at your own proposal on oil taxes. Is that a floor and a cap at the high end, or just a floor? Do you have any more details on that?
Well, a lot of what I'm going to be proposing is based on legislation that I've proposed in the past that you've all heard me talk about for years. One of the things would be a cap on both, quite frankly, and a progressivity cap and a gross minimum floor, so that because we are in a situation, we don't have a durable system. And the problem is with a government, when you have a tax structure that doesn't work at certain levels, there's always the risk that you have legislators who can go in and change it. And so if oil were to go down to $60, $70, $80 a barrel and plateau there and stay there, then our system is at risk because we don't have a floor. And this is something that was discussed. It was something that was in the original ACES bill. And in retrospect, it's something that we should have passed, particularly now that, and quite frankly, I think I can tell you, going back in history, the reason that it was taken out was because we said, well, we're in this and we're going to get it at the high end if it goes up. And so when you take away completely the high end to the point where you got the governor's fiscal note running at $4 billion loss just in progressivity at $150 and almost an $8 billion loss at $200. You know, if you were to hit oil at that price in a few years, we would be, the state would be bleeding, the oil companies would be making big billions in profits, and we'd be facing the prospect of firing teachers and firefighters and not being able to afford our roads and schools. So if you're going to completely give up the high end, or even any part of the high end, you got to give us more protection at the low end. That's the deal.
Rich.
Rich Mauer, Daily News. But wasn't that part of the compromise at the time? I remember the Governor Palin talking about that. We'll give up the floor, but we're going to take the high end.
Yep, that was exactly the compromise.
So, but now you're saying that in your opinion, you're going to keep the high end, but take the low end too, so basically tear up the compromise?
No,
because what we're going to do is we're going to cap the high end, and we're going to protect us at the low end.
So you're going to remake the compromise by not taking as much on the high end, but take more on the low end.
Keep in mind, you're talking at the low end. It's not a huge, I mean, it's really not a huge amount more. This is a net profits tax. Keep in mind, the oil industry doesn't they don't pay taxes until they start making a profit. So that was, you know, for a lot of us, that was a radical change. For the public, that was a radical change. But we were convinced to do that because we thought we were going to get money at the high end. We thought, okay, in the years where it was $100, $150, we're going to take in a huge amount, we're going to sock it away, we're going to save it, and then...
We saved it, $18 billion. That's what makes our picture and our bond rating, credit rating, better than it would otherwise be. And if they burn through that, the outlook is bleak.
So the proposal will be, we're going to cap it at the high end, cap progressivity, but then at the low end, we're going to take a little more. I think that's perfectly consistent with what we did, what the philosophy was when we passed ACES. The problem with the governor's bill, one of the problems is when you start pulling strings, the whole thing falls apart. I mean, it's a system, and you can't just say, well, we're going to get rid of capital credits over here and then keep everything in place over here. Once you start pulling on the string, it really does start to fall apart. The philosophy of it falls apart.
And we did not, at the time, when we gave up the floor for our share of the high side, and Alaskans like to share in the profits. When the price goes through the roof, Alaskans suffer with high energy prices, and we should be able to get that money into the state treasury and be able to help Alaskans with high energy costs. And that's been part of our challenge the last few years. But at the time, the compromise was made because we didn't contemplate a future of relatively modest to low energy prices. But with the development, the boom in shale oil, shale gas is one thing that's revolutionized energy in America, or is revolutionizing, but shale oil, that boom hasn't started here, but it's starting elsewhere and around the world, and that could, with high supplies of oil in certain places in the world, moderate oil prices. We may not always see prices around $100 a barrel. And so the consideration of the floor and protection of the people of Alaska is something we'll work on this session and something that we think is essential. Alaskans want to be protected. Alaskans want us looking out for their best interest, not hoping and praying that the industry will do something good for us. We need to protect ourselves. And people understand the simple concepts of a floor and participating in the profits at the high end. Alaskans want their fair share. Anything else before we wrap it up? Bob Tkach.
Thank you. I'm sorry if it's been asked before, but there's the governor's bill to reduce cruise ship liquid waste discharge standards is getting two hearings this week in Senate Resources Committee, starting this afternoon, and the same bill on Friday in House Resources. Has your caucus looked at that bill at all? Is it a pretty good idea? What do you think is going on with it?
I haven't had time to look at it, but it strikes me as the final piece of the rollback of the Citizens Initiative on cruise ship matters, policy that was made by the public some time ago, and there have been, they changed the taxes, and now they're trying to change the water quality standard. I'm not familiar with the details, but we'll become more familiar with that here in the near future. It seems to be a priority of the cruise ship industry and the cruise ship lobbyists. Pretty predictable. But I expect a spirited conversation about that to see if it's a reasonable change or if it's a rollback of the Citizens Initiative that doesn't make sense for water quality and salmon fishermen and coastal communities, all of those things that we should care about. Any final thing before we wrap it up? If not, we appreciate you all being here. We're going to continue this together and try and get out information in a timely manner, and we appreciate your participation today. With that, we are adjourned.